When you have insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds. And even Fox News won't air Republicans embarrassing President Biden impeachment hearings. All bad witnesses. And one was in jail. We have such an interesting show for you today. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz tells us about feeding hungry children. Then we'll talk to Congressman Eric Swalwell about the vibe shift in the vibes-based Biden impeachment. But first, we have MSNBC columnist and contributor and my friend, Charlie Sykes. Welcome back to Fast Politics, my friend, Charlie Sykes.
Hey, good to be back with you. It's good to be anywhere these days for me. I mean,
Well, so you are in the great state of Wisconsin.
I am.
Where this election will yet again come down to.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, everything in Wisconsin is close. It feels like every election is decided by about 20,000 votes. And by the way, before we get into all of that, I want to apologize on behalf of the entire state of Wisconsin for Senator Ron Johnson. I'm really, really sorry about that. Damn.
He did make a cameo in yesterday's Hunter Biden criming hearing. And again, Lev Parnas, hard to know. There were a lot of people testifying at those hearings who maybe were not completely ready for primetime. But he did say that all his intel went right to Ron Johnson. John Solomon to Ron Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to be called out as a complete toady for Russia, even if it's Lev Parnas. It's just exactly. it's kind of embarrassing. You know, Ron Johnson could have become anything he wanted to become, and he chose to be this. He chose to become like the doppelganger of Joe McCarthy, another one of our great Wisconsin
right.
institutions here.
Yeah.
And I'm really sorry because, you know, when I first got to know Ron Johnson, I thought he was going to be another William Proxmire. I don't know if you know this, but my dad actually wrote Bill Proxmire's biography. So I actually, and I gave Johnson a copy of it. I said, yeah, you know, there's a long tradition of being a maverick in Wisconsin. You can be the new Proxmire. Instead, the fucker decided to become Joe McCarthy. What can I say?
Well, yes, he has brain worms. The man has brain worms. That's what I'm trying to say. But you never know when a senator, like, for example, J.D. Vance, he ran as a MAGA, but he's turned into like Donald Trump's personal PR.
You know, that one is amazing when you think about it, because, you know, J.D. Vance is a smart guy. I don't really get upset over, you know, the complete moron from birth senators, you know, the Tommy Tuberville's and everything. I mean, you know, okay, whatever. You know,
Marsha Blackburn, yeah.
I was actually thinking of the same Marsha Blackburn. I mean, in that category, fine, you know, you're as dumb as a box of hair, whatever right. we can do, you know. But it's the guys who are really intelligent, who, you know, have good educations and who sit down and think, you know, I can be anybody I want to be, and I've decided that I want to be this dark Iago character.
Yeah.
And J.D. Vance, I mean, J.D. Vance is a best-selling author. He had movies made about his stuff. I mean, one time he wrote for the New York Times, and he's looking around, and he goes, you know, I want to be the craziest son of a bitch in this body, and he's succeeding.
Yes, it turns out that's not so hard.
Actually, it's not crazy. I want to apologize. I don't mean crazy because he knows what he's doing. It's more dangerous than crazy. Crazy is crazy. This is somebody who has basically decided, you know, I am going to move into a dark corner of right-wing politics, and I'm going to carve myself a niche, and I'm going to try to drag my party, you know, from the extreme position it's in right now into someplace even more extreme and darker. It's easy to cast that off as clown-like or crazy. It's not. It's very, very intentional, and it's very dangerous.
Yeah, and calculated.
And very calculated.
I think that's right. It is this kind of brinksmanship that the Burn It All Down caucus has really embraced. Are you of the George Conway school that this Republican Party just needs to be burned down?
Well, here's the problem. You know, whether you think it should be burned down or not, it's a fact of life right now that we have two political parties and one of them has ceased to be interested in governing.
Yeah.
And that is dangerous. I mean, we're never going to have a moment where we wake up and all 50 states are governed by Democrats and the Democrats have complete control over Congress. That's probably not likely to happen.
Right.
So what does it mean when you have a political party that is completely held hostage by this performative minority who is far more interested in generating clicks and hits on Newsmax and the Nancy Maces of the world who just want to be, you know, want to be seen and have no interest in actually doing the basic job? And the basic job is keeping the lights on. That's kind of the bare minimum. Okay, whatever else you're going to do as a member of Congress, you keep the lights on. You do not shut down the government that you are sworn to uphold. And yet, this has become this kabuki theater now for more than a decade. I have to admit, I'm bored by these things because it is this kabuki dance. And in the end, they decide not to actually blow themselves up, which is, I suppose, we should be thankful for that.
Right.
I mean, we're at the point like, hey, it's a good day in Washington, D.C. They did not blow themselves and the rest of us up. Hey, this is great. I hope you have a good weekend, too.
Right.
But I mean, this has become this theater of the dangerously absurd that we've been enduring ever since, you know, Ted Cruz decided, you know, I can become famous by being the biggest dick in the Senate. And I am not talking about the size of his male member here. I do not want to be misinterpreted there.
We're getting very naughty, Charlie Sykes, tonight.
I'm sorry.
It's hilarious. And look, you know, the whole system is a two-party system. So when one party gives up on American democratic norms, I mean, that is going to upset the whole way we do things in this country, right? I mean, is that the thing that keeps you up at night? Because that is the thing that keeps me up at night.
Well, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. I would like to think two things. Number one, that the election can somehow break the fever. It's not going to because the fever is really deeply engaged. I would also like to indulge the fantasy of thinking, you know, it's just politics and we can just ignore politics. I mean, the rest of life is great. Everything's going on well. You know, you step outside social media, people are going about their lives. But the reality is that no matter how successful a society is, if it gets the politics wrong, everything can go wrong.
Yeah.
And my evidence for that is the entire 20th century.
It's true.
Just ask the Germans, ask the Cambodians, ask the Chinese. Get back to me when you hear the answer. It would be nice to think that these people don't matter or that we could just simply sit back and watch the theater of their idiocy, but it affects all of us. So we are kind of trapped in this doom.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good point. And you really can. History is littered with people who think, you know, that if they just stay in their lane, the authoritarians will stay in theirs, right?
Absolutely. You know, I'd like to go, you know, walk my dogs, tend the garden. But the authoritarians generally, historically, do not leave people alone. Now, having said that, can we just go back to the whole, you know, Lev Parnas thing yesterday and Ron Johnson? I have to admit, that was extraordinary, even by the extraordinary standards of the clownishness of Congress. You know, and again, I'm not trying to trivialize it, but it's really hard to imagine that this Republican impeachment effort could have ended in a more spectacularly embarrassing way. If these people were capable of embarrassment, if we were not living in a post-Shane world, this has fallen apart so dramatically. And I'm not trying to carry any water for Hunter Biden or Joe Biden. I mean, there's some things that are sleazy that are going on, but it's almost impossible to write a script in which James Comer could make himself and his committee and the Republican Party in Congress look more completely feckless. And I mean, just dragging in these dregs and these foreign agents and having somebody testify from
jail.
Prison.
Yes. I mean, so the testifying from prison thing was unbelievable. And then that Jared Moskowitz moment where he was saying, you know, let's vote to impeach him right now. Let's go. And then Jim Jordan cracked up and could not stop laughing.
Well, because the thing has become just this sort of parody inside of a farce.
Yeah.
And I think at some point you start to recognize this. Look, we all understand what this is about, right? I mean, there's the political and psychological necessity of Republicans who have to find a way to rationalize supporting Donald Trump. And the only way they can really do that is to say, well, what about this? Or, you know, it's not, you know, yes, Donald Trump was impeached, but we're going to impeach Joe Biden. Yes, Donald Trump is thoroughly, thoroughly corrupt, but everybody's corrupt, right? You know, and Donald Trump demanded this, wanted this, pushed themselves into it. The base wants this. I mean, wow.
I think wow is the operative word here. Like, wow. The thing, again, is Republicans trying to keep the House, and they have all of these swing district Republicans who voted not only to impeach Joe Biden on neither high crimes nor misdemeanors, but instead on vibes. But also you had a cabinet secretary. They voted to impeach a cabinet secretary first time in 100 years. And they voted to impeach him not because of high crimes and misdemeanors, but because they were mad about his policy, right?
I'd totally forgotten about that.
That's still going.
No, seriously. I mean, it's just but see, the problem is that they do these big performative things and like, look here, you know, this is our record. We have done absolutely nothing. We are the ultimate do nothing Congress,
right.
Which, by the way, somebody should be able to run against. Yeah. I don't know. Harry Truman managed it. So this is our number one accomplishment. And what? Oh, yeah. OK. So where's that going? Nowhere.
Nowhere.
Hope it felt good while you were doing it, but that's it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't laugh. We have to laugh because we would cry.
Yes.
But it is really not what Congress is supposed to be doing. And they have passed like something, you know, 27 bills or something. I mean, they really have been one of the most ineffective Congresses in history.
I probably should have done some extra research before I brought this up, because you probably know more about this than I do. This new Republican study committee.
Oh, the best.
Legislative agenda. This is one of those moments where for people who haven't, I don't know if you've talked about this before, but they've come up with now, let's lay out our agenda. And you can tell that they live in a bubble inside of a bubble, because they have crammed into this, you know, one radioactive issue after another, you know, whether it's banning in vitro fertilization or supporting, you know, the right to life from the moment of conception to messing and screwing around with Social Security and Medicare. It's like, you would think that there'd be somebody that would be rushing down the hall going, God, people, do not put that in the Xerox machine. Do not send on this. We have vulnerable incumbents. Even Donald Trump, with his lizard brain, knows you do not talk about, well, actually, he's forgotten that you don't talk about Social Security.
Right, I was going to say.
But I mean, these things are just absolute gifts to the Democrats. I mean, they have to be sitting in the White House going, are you kidding me? Are they really going to be running on these things? Because it's not as if Democrats won't like say, by the way, if you vote for Republicans, it's not just that they're a clown car. This is what they intend to do. And they put it in writing.
Yeah, they're raising Social Security and Medicare, raising the age of Social Security and Medicare. That's something that no one has ever been for, ever.
Look, we have raised the age But there's so much else in there. And I guess it's part of, you know, reminding people that these are deeply unserious. On one level, they're deeply unserious. On another level, they're quite reckless and ideologically extreme.
Right.
And, you know, this year to go into, and this is the problem around the country now. So it's not just that, you know, Donald Trump is the head of the ticket, but Donald Trump is putting people like Bernie Moreno on the ticket for Senate in Ohio. And this is a guy who's like a caricature of every extreme Republican position you could have out there. I mean, Sherrod Brown could not be luckier. And you kind of wonder whether or not there might be a reverse effect where Bernie Moreno actually serves as a kind of a boat anchor on Trump, because Democrats can say, look how extreme these guys are on every one of these issues, one after another. And meanwhile, the serious grown-up Republicans, and many of them are conservatives, not just, you know, moderate, but I mean conservative Republicans, but who actually understand how the process works, they're being driven out of the party. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying, screw it. Yeah. Like Mike Gallagher in Wisconsin are going, you know what? I have a great future ahead of me, but if I had to spend 2 years sitting in the caucus with Jim Jordan, Lauren Boebert, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, I am out of here. It is just not worth it.
Right, exactly. People like Ken Buck. I mean, yeah, they can't keep their normal Republicans anymore, the few that were left. It does strike me that there is a group waiting in the wings if Trumpism manages to, you know, if fast forward, and again, we're 6 long months away from this, so who even knows? And you and I may be having our next conversation from Portugal, but there is a world in which I feel like a Liz Cheney is in the wings, and perhaps, again, we don't know what she's going to do, but a Nikki Haley keeping their, if Nikki Haley keeps her powder dry, she could theoretically, you know, help pick up the sort of rubble of this Republican Party if Trump loses again.
Molly?
I'm sorry. Is that wish casting?
No. I was going to say that I know we're being recorded here, but could I have some of what you're smoking?
Now, huh?
I could use that. I wish that were true. I think it's more likely what you're going to see is the rage directed at the Nikki Haley's and the Liz Cheney's and even the Mike Pence's of the world, that they are Judas Iscariot, that they have betrayed the orange Jesus and they can never be forgiven. Unfortunately, I don't see this fever breaking anytime soon. Now, I mean, I wish that at some point sanity would prevail, but it's really hard to see how, in fact, that happens. Because I think what has to happen, I think traditionally, is that a political party needs not only to be defeated, but needs to be defeated in multiple elections. I think I read somewhere a political scientist said, I think they have to, you know, suffer, you know, 3 consecutive, you know, pretty convincing defeats.
David Frum said that too.
I wish I could tell you that that's going to happen this year. But of course, as we know, the Republicans have now set up this narrative in which they never lose,
right?
Do they? They never lose. So the one thing that will purify a political party is the acknowledgement we have been defeated, and yet they will never be defeated. So you kind of have a conundrum there.
Yeah, it's a really good point, right? They will not admit that they've been defeated. And again, we're seeing already the rigged narrative going. The irony here, right, that Trump won the primaries because he changed the primary calendar, right, made it easier to consolidate votes. Thus, I mean, he probably was going to win anyway, but there's certainly, you could, if Nikki Haley wanted, you could accuse him of rigging.
If you want to do that. But the reality is that he won because the Republican base wants what it wants. He was fortunate enough to have incredibly weak candidates. I mean, there was a moment, there was this little, you know, sliver of possibility that Ron DeSantis might have been the Trumpism without Trump. But as you and I both know, he turned out to be an absolutely craptacular candidate. And
craptacular.
And who decided not really to run against Donald Trump? And so who knew that would fail? But this is Trump's Republican Party, and Trump's Republican Party did not want any substitutes. They wanted the real thing, and by God, they're going to get it good and hard.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie Sykes. You're the best.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Tim Walz is the governor of Minnesota.
Welcome to Fast Politics, Governor Walz.
Hi, Molly. Thanks for having me.
You know, Jesse and I have long wanted to have you on this podcast because some of the progressive legislation you have passed has become sort of like the wish list of all liberals. So you're kind of a big deal.
It's like the New Deal. We did the New Deal out here. So,
yes, you and Governor Pritzker are sort of two of our people where you've done the impossible. So you shot to fame in my mind when I saw that picture of you and the children.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So talk to me about some of this progressive legislation, how you've done it. And also, can we talk about that photo of the children when you've signed the free breakfast?
Yeah, well, thanks for bringing it up, Molly. I can die a happy man after that. And look, I've got a great comms team and everything, and people were writing then saying this was the most brilliant thing. And they're also very humble. They said, look, this was organic. We in Minnesota passed free breakfast and lunch for all of our kids. No more meal shaming, no more different colored ticket, no more families having to worry about filling out all the paperwork or whatever. For goodness sake, we can feed our children. So we went out to Webster Elementary School to sign that. And I did a signing and we had all the advocates and the legislator, but we were in a school with these kids and they were kind of just all sitting around. These are elementary school kids and they were into this. And I remember my signing statement, I said, and now all your classmates can eat. And these kids, their pure joy of understanding what it means to be a decent human being just sprung up and they just kind of mobbed me. It was this happy grandfather photo type of thing, but just symbolic of what we can do. So, and I think the, you know, going back to why did we get this done? Because how do you argue about that? It's just a smart thing. Look, these are also markets for our farmers out here. We're a big agricultural state. I always try and drop truth bombs on all of you. We produce more turkeys than any other state. So just so you know, we're the turkey capital of the world. And so we have all this. We produce a ton of food and our kids can eat. And I think we went into this session saying, look, there has been a pent-up desire. And people ask me, what are you most proud of? There is a list of things here that is really awesome. It's things that we fought for decades over. I think for me, it was changing this attitude. Progressives, by nature, are, you know, we're progressive and we're hopeful, but we can also be pessimistic people. Oh, it's a nice day, but it may snow tomorrow type of thing. Very Minnesotan about that. But I said we were conditioned to that bad things happen fast and good things took decades. So for me, it changed people's attitude. And especially with young people, I had a young 18-year-old who worked on a lot of this stuff, was interning at first and working, and said, you know, I worked on your campaign, Governor. We won. And 5 months later, we have paid family medical leave, free breakfast, and weed is legal. This stuff's not that hard. And I'm like thinking, oh, my God, we created monsters here, but in a good way. So that's how that came about. And that, I think that photo was just accumulation of what kind of progressive dreams is. Look, when our people, you know, they want to make it like we have an extreme agenda. Yep, it's just crazy. We want these elementary kids to eat. That is just really wild. And it really just stuck. It was pretty hard to push back against that photo.
When you watch Republicans argue about free meals and they'll say, like, we don't want, you know, some middle class kid getting a free breakfast. And you really do see how little this whole thing makes any sense, right? Like, you are a wealthy country.
That's where they're stuck right now. They don't have anything, Molly. And on this one, they actually said this to me. Look, there's going to be people that don't need this tax break. When have they ever talked about wealthy people that they're worried that somebody's going to get a tax break who doesn't need it? And I'm telling you, what I heard on this from was for those families who did not qualify for free and reduced lunch, whose kids wanted to eat at school and now could. And because of the way our country still, you know, the division of labor still falls heavily on women, I heard mothers say, thank God I don't have to make breakfast in the morning. Yeah. It's like my life so much better. That was the thank you. Like, look, we can afford it and everything, but this is just so much easier. So I agree. They got no pushback on it. That's your pushback. We can't afford to feed our kids.
So one of the stark contrasts, I think, of between blue state and red state governors is in Arkansas and a lot of other states, you have red state governors signing legislation that makes it easier for companies when they have underage children working to not have to pay the same kind of fines because likely they have underage children working. That has been a real movement in these red states to make the fines lesser for child labor. Talk to me about what it looks like to be a blue state governor in that kind of America.
Yeah, it feels like Victorian England, David Copperfielders. There was a really great one, showed the contrast. I think it was the same week I signed the free breakfast. I think the governor of Arkansas signed, you know, child labor laws. And I'll tell you what, her picture did not look as happy as the kids in my picture who were organically thrilled. Look, that's what they're doing. And unfortunately, this is in very dangerous business. We also are, you know, protein packing states, meat packing plants. These are dangerous places. There are no places for kids. And trying to look, we're all dealing with, you know, labor shortages that we're trying to get. We simply take a different approach and said, we're going to protect union workers and we're going to pay people more. And lo and behold, when you pay people more and give them worker protections, people move to your state and start working in those businesses. So this truly is the race to the bottom versus the idea of lifting up and building. And again, we're making the case out here. We did all of these things. And for the first time on the CNBC, they do their survey of the best states for the business climate. We moved into the top five, replacing Texas. Because it works when your workers are well paid, they have paid family medical leave, they have health care, their children have daycare, they have school meals, and you have an education level. Look, we made college free to folks that are making less than $80,000. Those are those working families that we need to participate in our economy. So I agree with you. The contrast could not be greater. And when we start measuring this, you really start to see it. And I don't know where the end state is for them. I don't know how telling people, forcing your kids, oh, it'll teach them character, as they lose an arm and, you know, in the equipment. It makes no sense. And we made the case here in Minnesota is, look, it is a moral imperative that people be safe, that they be protected, and we provide health care for those children.
Yeah, talk to me about health care, and then just talk to me about what you're doing on a local level for health care.
Well, you know, we have no system that makes any sense in this country. We spend twice as much as the next country in terms of that, and yet we rank, 38th in maternal mortality rates. It's just a shame. And it really comes home to press here. We've got more people insured than I think almost any other state. And of course, we're home to like the Mayo Clinic. So these are just recognized as the best healthcare system in the world, which is great if you can get in. And so what we've done is we have Minnesota Care, which, you know, folks can buy in and need it. We expanded that to folks regardless of their documentation status. Because once again, you know, the basic human rights of being able to take care of folks on, these are folks that are here working and processing. They're waiting for a legal system that is, again, takes 7 to 9 years to get your asylum claim processed. It would have been nice if Congress would have passed the legislation that would make that 90 days and put money into it. But, you know,
Trump didn't want them to. So,
of course, they don't want to because they want to complain about this. And these are in our community. So I think for us here, what really is interesting about this, Molly, it becomes harder and harder. What, you know, we asking Republicans and those who don't look at this way is, what's your complaint and what's the alternative? You know, where's this workforce going to come? And I think there's a real dynamic shift happening, and we'll see if it happens fast enough. The business community. The business community understands that we need to have immigration reform. The business community needs to believe, and they know that we need child care. That's a big issue for parents that can't find work and are out of the workforce. They get all of these things, but they're since so conditioned that many of these chambers of commerce are just, they think it's the old Republican Party. This is not where elected officials in the Republican Party are at today. So I'm actually somewhat hopeful that we're making the case that, look, not only can we take care of people and do the right thing and these progressive ideas about you should have health care and food and a safe place to live, and you should be educated. In the long run, that's how you grow the economy. And I think in Minnesota, it's starting to work.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. And Paul Krugman had a really good piece on the idea that maybe that this migrant surge is actually maybe one of the things that saved us from having a recession, which is kind of an incredible idea. So talk to me about what you are doing with the DGA to bring this idea of abundance nationally.
Yeah, well, and I'm really proud of the DGA. You mentioned it. You've got folks like J.B. Pritzker, Gretchen Whitmer. You've got, of course, Gavin Newsom, but you've got folks, Roy Cooper. You got Andy Beshear out in Kentucky. And on Saturday, this last Saturday, I was at the Democratic dinner in Topeka, Kansas, with Democratic Governor Laura Kelly. These ideas work everywhere. And I think one of the things the DGA does is we're out there to make the case that governors are the front lines of protection on all of these things, certainly on reproductive care and in vitro and voting rights and protections of our children and food and all of this. And that as Congress becomes more gridlocked and paralyzed, it becomes more important than ever to elect these governors. It's super inspirational to see Laura Kelly and Andy Beshear win, but now we've got to win down in North Carolina. And so what the DGA does is it goes out there, it supports, and we're super successful. We've defended 23 of 24 of our incumbent governors over the last three cycles. This year, we have no incumbent governors, but we've got, as I said, North Carolina after Roy Cooper's term limited, Jay Inslee up in Washington State, John Carney in Delaware. We got an open seat in New Hampshire. The DGA goes out and helps these local candidates. They know their best message. They know what stands. But we raise the money, have some of the technical expertise, and try and provide the support to get them elected. Because you said it, Molly, you just want to start comparing life expectancies, health care. Heck, compare happiness. They've got a thing, happiness. Minnesota, by the way, usually ranks second in this. And I'm okay with that because we're behind Hawaii in the happiest
Right. And you guys have some weather issues.
Yeah. COVID brought this to the front. It's statistically provable if you lived in a red state, your chance of surviving COVID was greater.
Was lesser. If you lived in a blue state, your chances of surviving COVID were greater.
Excuse me. Yeah, exactly right. And that these red state governors put you in, that's exactly right. We're very proud. We were one of the things we had is we're one of the 10 states with the lowest death rates on that. And lo and behold, our economy recovered faster and we had surpluses. So I think we're out there making the case that if you want to see your personal life improve, elect a Democratic governor. So if your listeners, Molly, I'll put in a shameless plug for the DGA on that. If they want more information on these great governors, and trust me, like in North Carolina with Josh Stein, he is literally running against a guy, a central casting of a Marvel villain. This guy is demonized the survivors of school shootings. He's called school teachers the most evil thing on the planet. He said, when you're pregnant, it's not your baby, it's y'all's baby now. Just insanity. So
he doesn't think women should vote.
Correct. I mean, the guy is on every front. So if they want more information on these, this, if you want to know where your impact makes a difference, these state-wide races make everything. We're able to codify abortion rights. We're able to make sure that we're a trans sanctuary state here in Minnesota. And be clear, I ran against a guy who had the absolute opposite opinion and all that. And in states where those type of guys won, life is hell. Women's life is put at risk. The vice president was out here last week. For the first time in American history, a sitting vice president or president stood in an abortion clinic. Yeah. Abortion clinics are healthcare clinics, by the way. That's what they're referred to. And stood in there and talked to a young woman from Idaho who had to travel from Idaho to Minneapolis, figure out how to do that. Luckily, she had the resources and everything, but it's just unacceptable. Democratic governors protect that. So if they want to text me, here it is, Molly. It's Tim at 30201. And what they'll do is get information on these races.
Yeah. One of the things I've been really struck by is the Medicare expansion. One of the things Democrats have done when they've been in red states is they've been able, and again, it depends on the state legislature, but they've been able to pass these expansions. Explain to us what happens when they do that.
For example, and there's two things that are the most despicable things in the world, using Medicare expansion, using federal dollars. And you know, many of the cases of Minnesota is a payer state. We get far less back from the federal government. A lot of these red states get an awful lot of federal dollars back.
Right.
But in the case of Medicare expansion, you're able to expand it to more people, make the eligibility there. And from a person's, on the most basic level of this is, it means somebody who couldn't get access to affordable health care does in, right. in the easiest way. And it comes with the federal money that helps. You've got to put in a little bit on state. But there's two things that I find the most despicable thing in the world. They turn this down. They, being Republican governors, turn it down. And there's been a new program that is an absolute godsend, is the summer EBT program, the summer SNAP. And I believe it's 15 of these states have turned it down. Now, these are folks that, my bet is I bet in their businesses, they took PPP loans for themselves. I bet you they take subsidy payments. I bet you they take other breaks. But on this, the governor of Nebraska said, this just creates dependency. And the governor of Iowa said, we don't have hunger here, which you all know is crazy. So I think tying back to this, having Roy Cooper in North Carolina meant 800,000 more North Carolinians were able to access Medicare and affordable health care, which again, even if you're a cruel, not caring about human beings getting this, it means they're healthier. They spend less money in the long run at the end. More people are able to work and take fewer days off work, and your economy grows. When people are healthier, your economy does better. So no, they turn it down. And it, because we don't want them, you know, they don't want socialism. It's their message. It is the most despicable, and those two programs, the most damaging things they can do, but it apparently appeals to their base. I don't know. I don't get it. Just cruel.
Right. And it's also, I mean, more likely the base doesn't know that it's available to them. Right. Because nobody's going to turn down.
Good point.
Yeah. And nobody's going to turn that down. And by the way, when they turn this money down, it's not like they get the money for something else. They just don't get it.
No, they don't get it. And then apparently they don't care. That's what this thing with this summer EBT program, you know, these are the worst time for kids in hunger is the weekends and breaks.
Yeah.
As you well, that's why they have to pack backpacks and food home. We were at a school last year before we were, you know, got through our school meals program. And there was a teacher talking about that she's had some of her children eating crayons because they couldn't get enough. They didn't know. And people are assuming, oh, there's charity things out there, whatever. These are parents that are just trying to make ends meet, working hard. And it's hard enough to navigate government when you're not in that situation. Your child's hungry or you're worrying about homelessness or whatever. Just the cruelness of it is what really strikes me. And I'll tell you, I'm going to make one more plug, Molly, for what I would encourage states to do and elect Democratic governors. During the pandemic, the federal government did the child tax credit. We saw the big reduction in childhood poverty in our nation's history. Well, we took that and put it on steroids in Minnesota. We have the most aggressive and generous child tax credit, $1,750 for every child, no limit on that. Whether you have to file taxes or not, you get that. We have seen over 300,000 children qualify. We have returned $400 million. And what it basically assures is in those families, for the first time, they have a guaranteed income source to take care of those children. It is estimated by all measures that that will reduce Minnesota's childhood poverty rate by a third. We're already the third lowest in the country. We will be by far the lowest of childhood poverty in the country. And again, what I would say is they'll go to school, they'll have good child care, their parents will have paid family medical leave. Imagine that. Mom and dad can take time off after they have the baby to bond with that child. We're going to have a better, healthier, well-qualified workforce for jobs of the future. So I come back to this again. Even if you don't want to add the humanity side of doing this, it's just smart to do.
Yeah, Jesus. Fundamentally, you know, I spend all day talking about politics, and the thing that I'm struck by is that Republicans have terrible policies.
Yes.
Like, there's just not a single policy where you're like, oh, that's actually kind of good.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe it's we're bad at this. Your listeners are saying this too. For God's sakes, how do you argue against these things that we're making the case that in the long run, you can save money, you can have a better economy? Look, if their stuff worked, I don't disagree with them because they're Republicans. I disagree with them because their ideas don't work and they're weird in a lot of cases.
they
could just show us that it worked. I don't have an ideological dog in the fight that I'm going to ram this thing through just because I like it. Well, on some things I am, but not on the big ones. On most of them, we just want it to work and they don't really have a response to it. Hell, they're fighting here. One of the things, Minnesota, you know, we're proud. We sent troops to defend the nation, you know, but we had a flag here that was pretty racist. It showed, you know, indigenous being driven out. You know, it was Manifest Destiny time and they did it. So we got a new flag that included everybody. But oh, you'd have thought the world ended for Republicans. Now that's their big thing. They need to be elected this year so they can overturn the flag and put back up the racist 1800s flag. That's the whole Republican Party right now. It's like a Venn diagram of, you know, Gadsden flag. Some of that, I don't get it.
Yeah.
But I think what we need to do, we need to do a better job of telling people, look, I'm a regular dude who hates politics. If you're that guy that's out there, well, here's how this is going to save you money. Here's how this is going to do this. Oh, and by the way, we've got background checks and, you know, red flag laws around the guns, but you can still own a firearm, no problem. We just don't want you shooting kids in our schools. And we're going to try to do things so you don't. It's really not that controversial. And I don't think we've done a great job. Apparently, we haven't. My God, my wife and I are public school teachers. And she said, we don't need standardized testing to show we're failing. They're still not voting for us on these things, which I think we have to do a better job of educating.
All right. You can be our governor next. Thank you, Governor Walz. Yeah.
Thanks, Molly. You're the best.
Congressman Eric Swalwell represents California's 14th district. Welcome back to Fast Politics, Congressman Eric Swalwell.
Hey, Molly. Thanks for having me back.
Delighted to have you back. And also, what is happening in the United States House of Representatives right now?
Chaos. Just absolute chaos. Nothing that would help anyone who listens to this podcast or who doesn't.
This morning, I was on Morning Joe, and they were talking about how they did modernize a duck stamp in the 20s.
Yeah, there you go.
Least effective Congress, right?
Yes. And Molly, I'm coming to you from the Judiciary Committee Library, which is just adjacent to a Judiciary Committee hearing that's been going on this morning. And right now, the top priority in the Judiciary Committee is an anti-transgender bill to create essentially gender checks for Olympic and amateur athletes. If that's like a thing and like this is a problem, maybe we should look at it. But last time
it's not.
As it relates to kids, like they want to be safe in their school. Their parents want to get their IVF fertility treatments to start families, and they don't want government mandated pregnancies. And we could actually work on all those things, which are things, in the Judiciary Committee. So that's just kind of the chaos and nonsense that is happening right now in the House Judiciary Committee.
That sounds insane. The thing that I'm struck by is Mike Johnson has this ever-slimming majority, right? I guess he has two seats now.
It's a two-seat majority, and if he was hoping to make it a three-seat majority, the Kevin McCarthy seat is all screwed up now. They're supposed to get that person back in a Tuesday special election, but McCarthy's handpicked candidate could not get 50% plus one, so he goes to a runoff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's still at two. Ken Buck is gone on Friday, so dire for them. But the good news is we're the only ones that get shit done. So, I mean, Hakeem Jeffries is, for all intents and purposes, the speaker, right? Because we have delivered the majority of the votes on anything that has ever mattered in this Congress, which you have never seen in the history of our Congress, and frankly, you've never seen in the history of any Congress or parliament around the world, which is the minority party delivering the majority amount of votes.
But that's because the Republicans, I mean, this is a function of the Burn It Down caucus, right? They don't want government to work. They want to make government small enough so they can drown it in a bathtub, right?
Yes, that's right. And so and many of them were saying as we approach another shutdown, which will be avoided again because Democrats will deliver the votes. But many of them were saying again this week, just shut it down, like with no plan in place as to like how you'd reopen it. But Tim Burchett said, just shut it down. We need to send a message. So, I mean, that's the mindset, is to just break things. These guys would be a great demolition crew probably don't want them as your carpenter.
Yes. Well, they never were trained in carpentry, right? They were only ever trained in demo. So you still have to pass some bills. Mike Johnson was installed in this job because Trump wanted him there, right? His work overturning the 2020 election and trying to overturn the 2020 election. If he wasn't willing to make deals with Democrats, the government would have already shut down, right?
And you know what? Credit to him on keeping the government open by, you know, passing these continuing resolutions that fund the government. You know, we're going to vote for those. I think it's nuts that 100 plus Republicans will vote against it. And that's why I hope he understands that he should just bring the Ukraine aid to the floor. His crazies they're never, you know, going to support anything as it relates to Ukraine because they see helping Ukraine hurts Russia. Russia likes Trump, so we can't hurt Russia if they like Trump. And I'm speaking for myself here, but you've seen other press reports that other Democrats may feel the same way. But for the next 8 months, if we're going to keep the government open and we're going to provide Ukraine the funding that they need, if Republicans were to try and punish Johnson by removing him, I don't know if I necessarily would be supportive of that if we're just, you know, doing the blocking and tackling, which is the bare minimum of what we'd be able to do anyway. And I think the sooner he realizes that, and, you know, the sooner he has confidence that he would remain speaker if he would just, you know, do what he believes in and what the country wants him to do, I think he'd be much more effective. That's not to say that we're not going to make Hakeem Jeffries the speaker anywhere.
Right. If Democrats get the majority, you're not going to want to have MAGA Mike Johnson in there. But he is definitely much less dishonest than McCarthy.
Also has shown, as I said, that, you know, he will keep the government open. He's not, you know, making baseless personal attacks, you know, against Democrats. And remember, Democrats would deliver the votes to keep the government open, and then we'd save McCarthy's ass. And then he would go on television and say and blame the Democrats. And that was why he lost the Democrats. We were just like, we're not going to bail you out, keep you in your job if you're just going to throw us under the bus. And you're right. Johnson has not done that. So again, if I'm just thinking what's best for my constituents with a Republican majority, well, it's to keep the government open and it's to fund, you know, the effort in Ukraine. We're not going to get anything more than that. So, you know, I just, as I think it through, I don't know if you're going to see a lot of Democrats willing to throw him out.
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of fundamental problem for Democrats and for Republicans is that Democrats believe the government can work, right? And Republicans do not. So, like, these Ukrainians are desperate for help. They could lose this war. Kyiv could fall.
Look, the pressure is working because, you know, we have heard behind the scenes, you know, that Johnson wants to find a way, you know, to pass this legislation. Look, the best deal was, of course, the one that the president struck with the second most conservative in the Senate, James Lankford, you know, to do the border, Ukraine, humanitarian aid in Gaza and Israel. That's the best deal. That's the most comprehensive. It addresses, you know, the global and domestic threats and needs. Ukraine, they're on the ropes right now. And what I think we don't articulate enough, and I'm guilty of this as well, is that the funding to Ukraine, this isn't a check that we write and send to Ukraine and then they cash it and then we're billions, you know, less in our account. No, this is a check that we write to U.S. defense companies who create U.S. jobs.
They get our old stuff, right? Don't they?
They get our old stuff or they get new stuff, but it's manufactured in the U.S. It creates U.S. jobs. It sustains U.S. jobs. And so we send weapons, not troops. And it's cheaper to do that if we beat Russia there rather than if Russia wins and then attacks a NATO country, because then contractually we're obliged to send U.S. troops. And then it gets a lot more, you know, costly. It gets a lot closer to us.
Yeah, there's Israel funding, there's Taiwan funding. This is meant to sort of be a larger defense aid package. Is that how you think it'll end up going through or no?
I do. And again, what's so maddening, and I think what frustrates most people at home, is that the majority overwhelmingly of Congress will vote for this. So it's not like they don't have the votes and he's, you know, preventing something from coming forward that, you know, doesn't have support. No, you would see 300 out of 435 members of Congress at least vote for this. And so if we're not at a place that reflects where, you know, the majority of votes are and where, you know, what the majority of our constituents want, then we're not really a democracy anymore, right? And that's what's really frustrating.
Yeah. When we look at what's happening in the House right now, do you feel like there is a future for this Republican Party?
No. They have shown that it's a shit show when you let them govern. You know, they spend just as much time fighting themselves as they spend fighting for anything that they claim to believe in. They're all in on Trump, and that's got to be quite confusing for them, because one day they want to ban TikTok, and then Trump says, no, don't ban TikTok. And then he just kind of scrambles them, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what to do, how to govern. And they're not loyal and backing somebody who has like a core set of principles, right? Everything that Donald Trump supports, he looks at first through the lens of like, how does this help me?
Yeah.
Like, me. And then they have to twist and contort themselves, you know, to change their positions because they have to find a new way each day, you know, to reflect what Donald Trump wants. And so that's what is so dizzying, you know, around this place is that it's really just a law firm of attorneys who are working for one client, Donald Trump. And he doesn't necessarily want the same things every day. I mean, he can be quite inconsistent, consistently, you know, about himself. And so that seems to be at odds with the priorities of, you know, what people at home care about, as so many of their rights are facing this demolition crew. So many of their freedoms are facing this demolition crew.
You can't talk about what you saw in that TikTok briefing, but clearly it's persuasive.
Let me say this, and I voted against, you know, what could lead to the ban.
Tell me why.
One, at the most basic level, you know who bans things? China bans things. To start, I didn't want to do anything that felt like it was something China would do. Two, this is a platform where millions of people between 18 and 40 are engaging. It's just a place where small businesses are engaging. And it just seemed to me that if we want to have a conversation about algorithms and data and privacy, we should do that for all social media, not just be seen as being in the business of bans. And so, Molly, I say all of this, like, look, Republicans have a crazy longstanding fantasy about me and China. And I knew that, you know, taking this vote would just reinforce like this fantasy that they have. But I still voted against the ban because I just don't want to be anywhere near a ban. And I think there's better ways to do it without banning it. And, you know, the president just 2 months ago went on TikTok, signed up for TikTok. He's been quite effective on TikTok. There were over 200 million views of portions of his State of the Union on TikTok. So 8 months out from an election, you know, that's a place where we want to communicate, you know, to a very consequential generation who is going to make a difference in November.
Okay, so that is a reason not to ban TikTok. In my mind, you know, there are more nefarious owners of TikTok than even the CCP, right? I mean, look at X, right? I mean, we know what's happening there. But I'm curious, like, the argument for banning it is that China bans all American social media in China. I mean, like on the times that I've known people to go to China, they tend to have another phone, right? Because it is not necessarily a place where you can feel safe about your data.
That's right. And that's why I think, you know, we could go at this in other ways as it relates to where data is stored or the transparency and understanding who has access to it, without, as I said, essentially forcing a ban. But it was persuasive to me, to be honest, that the top Democrat on the Intelligence Committee voted against it as well. And that person is in what is called the Gang of Eight and has access to more intelligence information and threats than, you know, almost anyone in the world. And so that's why I just think, you know, anytime we get close to a ban, it feels like it's a slippery slope. And by the way, I'm out on the campaign trail telling people why Republicans, you know, want to ban books and they want body bans and book bans. And I just don't generally like bans unless you can articulate that the harm is greater than infringing on speech.
Right.
This is a freedom election to read, the freedom to vote, you know, the freedom to breathe clean air, the freedom of body, the financial freedom, freedom from violence. I mean, there's all these freedoms on the line. And I just, as I said, I'm a little cautious when it relates to how we communicate.
Yeah, that makes sense. What is sort of next? I mean, do you think that the Democrats in the House understand the opportunity they have here with this do-nothing Congress to flip the House? And do you think that they're working on it? And are you working on it?
Yes. This is, you know, a good chunk of what I am working on because, you know, it's so tied to, you know, what freedoms we will enjoy or not enjoy. And today, women are facing fertility bans, you know, across the country. And Trump has appointed federal judges who believe that life begins at conception. And that's the underpinning of what led to the ban in Alabama.
Embryonic personhood.
That's exactly right. And they think you're a serial killer if you don't use all the embryos. I mean, it's just, it's nuts. And so that's what's at stake. We've got great candidates running all over the country. And that's where I'm, you know, spending my time and energy to make sure that freedom wins this November.
Yeah, really good point. Thank you, Eric Swalwell. Thank you for joining us.
Of course. Thanks, Molly.
And now your moment of fuckery.
Jesse Cannon.
Molly Jungfast, the press, they're saying Little Marco's in the VP running, but my money's still on Kristi Noem up in South Dakota. What are you seeing here?
I mean, look, Kristi Noem runs sponsored content,
yes,
right? She does advertisement. She did one for fake teeth. Again, not going to cast aspersions. I love my veneers.
I was going to say, as people who make money from SponCon, tread lightly, please.
Right. We love sponsored content and we also love fake teeth, but we are not governors yet. So Kristi Noem is definitely in the running. Little Marco, few people have demeaned themselves so much for so little. I don't think Trump picks Little Marco, but I do think he gets Little Marco excited enough so that when he doesn't pick Little Marco, it will be yet another humiliation. And yet we have to quote the Rick Wilson here, everything Trump touches dies. That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.